Hey, what's going on, peeps? Listen up.
Knowledge bombs after knowledge bombs after knowledge bombs.
Was that everything you thought it would be?
And more.
The Top to Bottom Podcast with Keenan and Beck is starting in 3, 2, 1.
This episode of Top to Bottom is sponsored by Noted Analytics. Are you tired of losing sales opportunities to the status quo? Not seeing meaningful information in CRM to help close deals? Empower your team with Noted Analytics, the first guided selling for CRM platform that uses sales methodologies like Gap Selling, Medic, and others to revolutionize the way revenue teams capture, evaluate, and measure sales process effectiveness. Start increasing win rates, shortening sales cycles, and growing average sales prices today. Check it out at notedanalytics.com.
And we're live.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of your favorite sales podcast, The Sales Top to Bottom. I'm your host, Keenan, and I'm here with Beck Holm. Beck, who's in your living room right now?
Right now, there is an echo, so it sounds like there's two of you in my living room.
That is the greatest day you've ever had in your life.
I heard it twice. I have to log back out and log back in. Yeah. Sorry.
We'll see.
You know what this is? This is that French internet, man. This is that French internet. We keep having issues over there, don't we?
Yeah. Apparently they don't like the buildings are so old, you know, you don't even like install cables or Ethernet cables inside the building. You have to wire it all through, bring it to the basement, the whole shebang.
The whole shebang. Should we wait for the lovely Beck or should we start?
I think that we should wait for the lovely Beck. However, bringing out the bobblehead, Keaton. There we go.
I think I'm going to get a bunch of these for Christmas and just give them away.
Okay, so my question is, Keenan, for you,
yeah,
is did you base, when you made that bobblehead, did you base it off of Tiger Woods or Barack Obama?
Wow, that's cold-blooded, man. I think you did a pretty good job.
I know. I think they did a pretty good job.
I hear what you're saying. You just pulled a reverse Asian joke on me. You're like, all blacks look the same. I see what you did.
Hey, Tiger Woods is half Thai. He's part Asian. You know, we gotta represent.
He is. Yeah, he is. But yeah, I have a whole theory on that. But okay, everybody, listen. This is everybody's chance to get all upset at me right now. I'm gonna give everybody a chance to get upset. So yes, he is part Asian. He's Thai, right? His mom's Thai. Okay, but in my little world, I'm half white. Okay, my mom was German, mostly German. Okay, but ain't nobody called me a kraut in my entire life, and I'm pretty sure no one called Tiger a chink. But we were called nigger enough times that we know where we stand. And so when people say, well, if you're half, why don't you identify and talk about more about being white or this, that, and the other thing? Because that's not how the world sees us. My daughters are much, much lighter, and they pass. Sometimes don't even know they're black. Tell them black jokes and shit with that, and then they say they're like, oh, shit, I didn't know. So they don't necessarily associate themselves or align themselves with their perception of who they are. They see themselves as mixed, but in their day-to-day, they're seen a certain way. So this whole idea of people, you know, moving through life and when someone's half and getting mad, they don't recognize the other half. Society tells you pretty quick who you are.
Oh, yeah.
Society tells you pretty quick who you are. And trying to fight that uphill battle, I gave up on that. It's not worth it.
I feel you. Well, hey, they say that I'm half Asian and the other half's also Asian, so.
All right, let's get going. We can't wait for Beck. I want to, but I can't.
Sounds good.
So everybody here, throw in any questions you have. Tag people. Oh, look at that. Cynthia Bunn said, oh, my God, you're going to make people clutch their pearls. That's what I do, Cynthia, but you know I'm right. Cynthia knows I'm right. As a sister, she knows I'm right. You know? And anybody, look, I don't want to get too historical. And those of you who don't know, you don't know. And those of you who want to know, you're going to know. I'm going to give you a lesson here. Go look up the Plessy v. Ferguson Supreme Court case where that basically decided separate but equal. They chose a black man who looked very, very white. He called pass, but he was black. And he sat in the front of a trolley car for whites only, and no one had a problem with it. And they did this on purpose to kick off the Supreme Court case. They did this on purpose. And then after riding for like 15 to 20 minutes, he then told the conductor he was black. And the conductor said, well, whoa, if that's the case, get the fuck back. He said, I'm not moving back. And his argument was, if you couldn't tell, then how are we supposed to have this law? Right. Mm-hmm. So the idea was, one, that was against the Constitution to split people up. But two, how do you define what black is? How do you define what any other race is? Because if you look at me and you don't think I am, then I'm not. Right. And that's what the Supreme Court said. A single drop. You're considered black. Go to the back of the bus. So there's a lot of history behind this. It's fascinating.
Hey, Beck's back here and seems like her video quality is amazing now.
Oh, well done, Beck.
Thanks.
Beck, we just went down a whole crazy road, so we better get out of it. Let's
go. Went through a panic moment.
Oh, yeah.
No, we went down like race and history and Supreme Court cases. Oh, you did.
Panic moment.
Got it.
Okay. What?
Go ahead.
Go on to the first
question. Ask me another question. Second question.
I warned you guys. I got exactly 46 minutes and I'm out. Sorry, I love you, but I'm out.
All right. Well, I guess in that case, we're on to the first segment of this podcast, which is called Gaslit. So this is the segment where we ask Beck and Keenan questions that sales gurus strongly recommend that AEs ask on discovery calls. And they say if it's a self-diagnosis question and score the question. So the first one today is, what would you say is causing the problem? Beck, why don't you start us off on this one?
Well, it's a self-diagnosis question. You're asking what they believe. It's a really common self-diagnosis question. It's not the most common. I think that most self-diagnosis questions are usually around what are the challenges, what is the impact, da da da. But it broadcasts to me, if I'm going to try and diagnose a root cause, I do want to, it is interesting to me to understand what they believe and why they believe it. The problem I would have with this question is when it's standalone, meaning you don't ask any other root causes behind it. So to ask someone, imagine if like a patient walks in a doctor's office and they're like, why are you here today? That's a fair question. You know, like, oh, I have pain around blah, blah, blah. And then if the doctor said, what would you say is causing that? Like a pretty ridiculous question, right? So I'm going to define limits. Like if I think that the root cause, for instance, of a quota attainment issue could likely be time of day that they're sending it, amount of quality, how many they're sending. And I would ask questions. I wouldn't say, what do you believe is the root cause? I would say, how many emails are you sending per day? How many calls are you making per day? What time of day on average are you making them? What are the open rates and reply rates? Can you give me an example of the quality, you know, of like the typical messages that you're sending so that I can diagnose the root cause? It would make me much more comfortable. So not a terrible question, but standalone, it does definitely potentially broadcast to them that you don't know what you're talking about, especially if you take them at their word and don't ask any other questions after that. So I'll give it a 3.
All right. What about you, Keenan? What are your thoughts on this question?
I think pretty much what Beck said, it has a lot to do with timing. One of the nuances of self-diagnosing questions is, sometimes I can't know. So, if I've done a good job of uncovering the problem, I've done a good job of uncovering the root causes, but there are some ancillary things like, for instance, all right, so let's say we're talking about compliance and they're out of compliance. Well, what happened if you continue to be out of compliance? That's not self-diagnosing, right? Like I can't know that. So to your question, what do you think is causing the problem? Let's just say there's two or three layers down that I never could have figured out. Like it's just, I don't have that level of knowledge. Then yeah, I want their opinion 100%. But generally speaking, the way it's used today, it's one of the early questions. It's like one of the first ones off the top. So no, you don't want to come into a discovery call and tell me what the problem is or whatever. So I'd give it out. Same as back at 3.
3. Okay. Well, the next question is, help me understand the most nagging challenges you face when it comes to blank. Keenan, what are your thoughts on this one?
This is very contextual. So again, depending where it's asked. But generally speaking, I like it because the idea is nagging, right? So I want your opinion now. I actually want your opinion. I can't anticipate, like, what's nagging? That's a sense of hierarchy, and that's a sense of what I think versus something else. So if I'm, again, I like the therapist mode. If I'm a therapist to you and I want to understand what's happening in your relationship, I'm like, well, tell me about communication. And you tell me we had shitty at and it sucks. Well, tell me about your intimacy where we never have it. Tell me about your ability to manage the children and discipline the children together. And so these are things I know are going on in a bad marriage, right? But then from that, and I hear about the communication, I cannot anticipate what nagging is. There's no way I'm going to know that because everybody has a different sense of what nagging is a different sense of what they find to be irritating. So to go deeper in that, so you say you guys communicate poorly and he does this and doesn't do this. So of these things, what is most nagging? What is most nagging in this environment? That helps me go further that I never could have anticipated on my own. So I like that one. I'm going to give that a 8.
Ooh. All right, Beck, what about you? What are your thoughts on this question?
It's self-diagnosis, which isn't bad necessarily in this case. My thoughts are, and I'm to a, I think a further degree than Keenan in terms of how much self-diagnosis I'm willing to tolerate almost because I think my buyers are so sensitive to it. So I'm going to give it a 3.5.
All right. So I'm going to let you buzz me. Buzz me. Beck. Everybody, asterisk, giant asterisk. Beck does not have to agree with me here, but I want to make it clear from my vantage point. There is a difference between a self-diagnosing question and an opinion. So a self-diagnosing question, and just for the record, not to pull rank, but I came up with that term. We use that term in gap selling, and we've been telling people that for a while. The reason I don't call that a gap selling question is, self-diagnosing. Is self-diagnosing is asking you to figure out what the facts are or the underlying causes or the realities of a situation. It's like asking you to do math. 1 + 1 = 2. Well, I should be able to do the 1 + 1 = 2 if I'm an expert. Opinion questions are not self-diagnosing because there is no right or wrong answer. What is nagging you the most? That is not right or wrong. I may know the 3 or 4 things that nag that are nagging. I have no idea what number one is. And oh, by the way, I can't tell you that's wrong. If you say this is nagging me the most, I'm in no position to tell you you're wrong. So sometimes I want your opinion, which is very subjective, not objective. But other times when you ask these self-diagnosing questions, there are objective answers and you should know those. And asking your customer to self-diagnosing something that's objective is not fair, not your job, not their job.
All right.
Well, is that it?
Beck, what do you got to say? What do you
gotta say? I didn't even explain why I thought what I thought, which I think is interesting. But I'm always going to be after asking very objective questions that will help me diagnose. And it's just maybe a preference perspective of, this question hits me wrong for 3 different ways. First, it's self-diagnosis. Second, it doesn't give them options. So it doesn't show that you know anything about what the most nagging challenges hypothetically would be. And then third, it is non-objective. So I feel like our buyers today, this is just my opinion, our buyers today, they're so sensitive to salespeople because of their experience with salespeople. So anything kind of in that direction of, it's not a dead on question of like, do you fight with your wife often versus how many times would you say that you fight in a month, if at all? I'm always going to err towards the latter. If nothing else, it readies up a definition that I need anyway, of what the limit is of something, what the finite amount is, so I don't have to burn another question on it. And it also, I feel like, gives me a cleaner surgical hand in the room. That's why I rank it so low, is I'm just super sensitive to anything that's getting them to tell me what they, you know what I'm saying? Of like leading them somewhere is just my vantage point of why I'm saying that. It's a 3.
All right. Well, with that, we are on to the next segment of this podcast, which is called Street Smarts. Going to here. So this is the segment where Keenan and Beck read advice that's told to AEs on how to run discovery and give their take on the advice being given. So here's the first piece of advice that's been circling around. To run a killer discovery call, you have to align your questions to the buyer journey. If you learn that your buyer is actively evaluating products like yours, don't start with this kind of question. What's your biggest strategic priority for this year? But your buyer is beyond that stage. They're evaluating products. So if you start with this question, you'll just irritate them. I'm not saying don't ask the question at all. I'm saying don't start with it. Start with sales discovery questions that respect the buyer's journey stage. What do you hope to achieve by implementing a solution? You see the difference? All right, Keenan, what are your thoughts on this piece of advice?
I don't see a difference. Read the two questions again and help me understand how it's different.
What's your biggest strategic priority for this year? And what do you hope to achieve by implementing a solution?
All right. One's more macro. It's the same. It's the same question in a different outfit, right? I mean, it really is the same question. You don't ever ask a customer what they're trying to achieve. You don't ever go to future state before you understand their current state. That's the simplest way for me to put this. Okay. Look at everybody. I've been saying this for, it's going to be 5 years in a month. No. Yeah. 5 years a month. The gap signs now. Okay. December 18th. So it'll be December 20th. So 5 years it came out. Okay. Which blows my mind. And I've been telling everybody since day one, and it's as much as I get head nods, I don't think people really truly grasp it. The reason gap selling is so different is it is written in tandem, not in tandem, in line with the understanding of change management. Why do people change? And that's what sales is all about, and people miss that. People think sales is about vision, getting them to buy something or buy into a vision. No, it's getting them to recognize that where they are now is untenable and they can no longer stay there. So any question that says, what are you looking to get out of something, where you want to go, that is getting ahead of the curve. You need to start with what's going on. Why do you need to change? What's going on? What's happening today that you're unhappy with? What is affecting you here? Why are you like, where are you now? Why do you even have to consider changing? That's where you want to start first. Any other conversation is taking you down the wrong road.
Hi, Beck, what about you? What are your thoughts on this piece of advice?
Well, yeah, two things come to mind. The first thing that comes to mind is an object in motion stays in motion and an object at rest stays at rest unless enacted upon by an outside force. So you have to keep in mind your buyer's at rest, right? So something has to change for them to mobilize to buy for outbound, let's say. And so I think what Keenan's really hitting around there is there has to be something that's worth it for the buyer to actually change, because change comes at a high cost, comes at the cost of, you know, the price tag behind it, all the people you have to get in behind the decision. What happens if you get it wrong? How will that affect your credibility? How will it make you look as a leader? How will that affect other problems when you change it? So it's a big deal when someone mobilizes to actually buy. So the main thing that I have that I think is incorrect about this post is they're talking about being hyper respectful to the buyer's journey. So what they're saying in that is if someone is really far down the buyer cycle, then you need to essentially kind of get out of their way. And when someone's really far down the buyer cycle, they're doing that because based on what sellers have done to them so far, they believe they're going to have to self-diagnose anyway. So they might as well get themselves most away there. And then they just need pricing and they can check out with cart. So what I implore sellers to do, or challenge sellers to do, of like when they're that far down the buyer journey, you are at a higher risk that they have self-diagnosed something incorrectly that they're about to take action on. So you need to diagnose fast and with extreme precision and with credibility, because if they're about to jump off that cliff, not knowing that it's a cliff, then them being 15 feet away from the cliff, as opposed to being 1 foot away from the cliff, if they're 1 foot away from the cliff, it's higher impact if you don't diagnose quickly. So I almost think it's the opposite of the advice of like, you need to respect the buyer's journey, but how you need to respect it is not by getting out of their way. It's by ensuring that everything's correct before they swipe that credit card and check out with cart. They don't buy something A, they didn't need, B, didn't solve the problem, and C, maybe even made it worse.
Yeah, look, so the problem with this whole concept of respect the buyer's journey and this bullshit phrase that I cannot accept anymore. The buyers are 50% through the sales cycle, 77% before the sales cycle, before they reach out. We gotta stop that. It just has to stop. Everybody listening, I do not want you to tout that, repeat that, or regurgitate that stupid ass stat again, because it's flawed or something's jacked up. So let me help you with three things, okay? Okay, everybody. Over 1,200 buyers surveyed. Not 1,200.
I was about to say, it's got to be the stats. So 50%.
Have you ever purchased the wrong product or service because you, the buyer, did not properly understand the problem you were solving? 48% said yes. So it's two off of 50 and a half. One in every two bought the wrong fucking thing before, okay? But if that's not enough for you, have you ever purchased a product or service you didn't know you needed until after interaction with a salesperson? 61% said yes. So half these people even know they needed or had a problem before they bought it. And to end it, have you ever purchased the wrong product or service because the salesperson recommended a solution without properly understanding the problem you were trying to solve? The answer was yes, 47%. So what this tells us with all three of these questions, adding to the fact that the number of times people actually rescope the problem after starting the buying process is no one has a freaking clue. No one has a clue, and they need us to help them understand it better. And unfortunately, we're not doing that job, and they're getting frustrated. Mm.
All right. Well, we're going on to the next piece of advice that's been circling around. This one says, the main mistake in discovery is treating each prospect as a unique snowflake. So your objective in discovery is to establish credibility, find why they want to change, and see who else cares. Keenan, would you like to start us off on this one?
No, Beck can go.
No, you can't defer.
All right, well, I went first last time, that's all. The main mistake is to treat them like a different snowflake?
Yeah, treating each prospect as the main mistake in discovery is treating each prospect as a unique snowflake.
Who the fuck wrote that? Like, seriously, who is the fuck nut that wrote that? Did they stop and think? Did they literally stop and think for 1 second about what came out of their mouth? 1 second. Hello, I don't care if you have two companies. They sell two McDonald's franchises. They sell the exact same burgers. They got the exact same fucking Cokes. Everything's exactly the same. If you think that each of them deals with the exact same problem, and oh, by the way, that problem manifests itself in the exact same way, and oh, by the way, the numbers and metrics, etc., are playing out the exact same way, you have your head so far up your ass, you can taste your own shit. This is crazy. This is crazy. This is crazy. No, by default, it is nothing more concrete. If there's nothing more concrete in this world, it's that every single person in every single business is a snowflake. It literally is. And even if they look the same, they're not. And your ability to understand how each one of these problems manifests itself differently in each of these clients, even if they're the same, and I'm selling to three McDonald's franchises, I can tell you the difference in each one, the problems, how the problems manifest differently. One could be hiring and the people that the hiring pool they got from that community. Another one could be the location. Another one could be the compliance around the health codes. Like, it's all different. It's all different. And this is what pisses me off, because we keep trying to, everybody wants to make the shit scalable and put it in a fancy package, and it's just bullshit. You can't. Sorry, Beck, but I had to go off on that one.
I bet. Close us out.
I almost wanted Keenan to just close this out. I just couldn't agree more. You know, you can know rough guardrails around what typically someone wants to solve, and, you know, around what problem you're usually seeing and what the identifiers are for that. But someone saying that the main mistake in discovery that you're making is that you're making each prospect a unique snowflake, it's the opposite. The 180 is true. Your main mistake in discovery is that you're not making everyone unique. If you don't know their metrics, if you don't know how that's translating to their business, that your main mistake is not knowing that.
All right. Well, with that, we are on to the next segment of this podcast, which is
Take it or leave it.
This is the segment where I introduce common sales tactics, and Keenan and Beck let us know whether they would take it or leave it. And the first one of today is telling a customer they are not a good fit and refusing to do business even when they want to buy. Beck, take it or leave it.
I am, and I know you're going to hate this, I'm a dead on TV because I don't know what's behind it. Meaning, telling a customer they're not a good fit and refusing to do business with them, even when they want to buy. Like, it depends on if they're not, truly not a good fit. And if they truly understand why they're not a good fit based on what I know so far. So can we refine the question?
You know it, Beck. You've done your discovery and you know it says you know they're not a good fit. You won't do business with them.
Oh, so I know they're not a good fit, but they won't believe me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I
will take it all day long, meaning if I don't think they're a good fit, I'm going to tell them 15 times over why, based on what I know and what they said, I don't think that I'm a good fit. I don't think that I would say I 100% refuse. However, in every single case that I've done that, and I've done it quite frequently, the outcome was achieved, meaning, you know, they're like, okay, we believe you. Yeah. I think it's unethical not to, and to do it with like conviction, diagnostic conviction of what you're saying is you want to achieve this. Like, I haven't had to like point out refuse because I've been so conviction heavy whenever I'm convincing them that I'm not the right person that it worked. But I think it, like, if push came to shove, yes, I probably would refuse to do business with them.
Keenan, what about you? Take it or leave it.
Take it all day long. All day long. I do this a lot with SKOs. I get called in to do SKOs. And I don't mind. Look, I like doing SKOs and I'll do them. But when I go through the conversation, if the purpose of spending this money is to get their sales team to change their behaviors and to have an outcome at the end of the year. In other words, we're going to do an SKO in January and you're going to come in and speak without 2 hours, whatever it is. And then the reason we're doing that is because we want to grow revenue. We want to do this. We want to change this. We want to change that. I'm like, look, I'm not taking your money. I said, if you're there to get them inspired and excited and learn a few new things they may or may not apply, I'll come in. But if the objective is behavioral change, I'm not taking your money because you're not going to see behavioral change. So no, I take it all day long.
I have a small story I have to tell you that will blow your mind. I had someone come in and say they want to do an SKO, and amen. SKO is the first one that comes to mind. And they, like, I go through the whole process and I'm like, well, it's not going to solve the problem, basically, is what I'm thinking. And he said, well, let me be very clear. He's a big heavy hitter. Let me be very clear. I really want to get rid of some AEs. And so this is like their last shot. So I'm just trying to, yeah.
So that's even, I'm definitely not going to do it because I'm not going to have an AE lose their like job.
That I have an excuse, basically, that I enabled them. And I was like, when are you planning on issuing out your final decision? Is it final? He's like, not technically final, but basically a week later. And I punted the deal. I was like, I'm sorry.
I'm not playing in this.
Totally. Then I'm like, I cannot be that person. I'm sorry. It was shocking to me that I was like, I can't believe you're saying this to another human being. I can't believe you're doing it.
All right. Well, the next one for take it or leave it is Calendly links or auto meeting schedulers. Beck, take it or leave it.
I'm going to leave it. I think it's tacky and I think it puts the buyer in the wrong psychological state of mind, and it hurts deliverability. It usually causes a power shift, oddly enough, specifically with Americans. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to leave it for all three reasons.
Keenan, what about you? Take it or leave it.
You know, I was a leave it for a long time, and now I'm taking it with a caveat. Because I started getting them, and I actually like being able to just click that thing and pick something rather than the back and forth. So I'm a take it with an asterisk. That is as a default. Or if it's easier for you, feel free to click my calendar. Mm-hmm. So it's more like everything I always do, what time works, or somebody signs at work, I'll get it scheduled, or can we write and. Then and or if it's easier for you, feel free to pick something. So if that's a leave it with an asterisk or take it with asterisk, I don't know. It's up to you.
I will do a quick one. Keenan, free trials for proof of concept. Take it or leave it.
Leave it.
Beck, leave it. Take it or leave it.
Leave it.
Leave it. There we go.
I love it. Yeah, that's a leave it.
No, that's a leave. Well, hey, with that, we are on to the next segment of this podcast, which is
the inbox.
Yeah. This is my favorite segment where Keenan and Beck answer questions from our audience. And to help with that, we have none other than Min's Magical Mailbox. And I was going to replace the sticker, but I got a decent amount of LinkedIn DMs after last week's podcast saying to keep it.
I agree. So, I think Min's Magical Mailbox is dope.
It reminds me of something I'm not going to mention for women, but it's like I forget about the pain until it's here every single week. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that thing's
done. No, I love it. Min's Magical Mailbox. And it's magical in the color, too. That's
so cool. Oh, yeah.
It's magical, 100%. Creepy.
Well, hey, the first question from Min's Magical Mailbox is from Claire Andrews from England. And she asks,
England.
A lot of what you cover. Oh, yeah, very. but a lot of what you cover sounds like it's for AE selling to white space, i.e. to clients who are brand new and unfamiliar with your offerings. However, what would an account manager assign to a current customer? Or how would an account manager assigned to a current customer upsell well? So your customer is already familiar with the product you offer, but your job is to upsell. Keenan, why don't you start us off on this one?
Okay. I'm going to try to be quick because I want Beck to give me your opinion. Okay. I feel like I'm doing something wrong in the sales world. I really do. I do. Because I do hours a week of content and podcasts and gap sell Keenan's. And I feel like the message is the same every single time. It says on my book, problem centric, getting customers a yes. How problem centric selling. Problem centric selling helps you win more deals. This woman has been listening to us and she just wrote, and a customer's already familiar with your product. I am yelling because I am at wit's end with myself. I don't know how else to tell the story so that people get it. So this frustration and anger and yelling is not at the world out there. It's at myself. I don't know what else to do. I am at a loss. My answer to her is the same answer it has always been. It will be 1,000 more times. Fucking stop thinking about your fucking product. The answer is you are an account manager. You're in that account every single day. You see the processes that they use to execute the business in the areas that your product or service solves. You see the breakdowns. You should know the KPI. Unlike a sales rep who has no idea what's going on inside the organization, you're in. You're a fly on the damn wall. You're there. So what you need to do is you need to look around, you need to build your relationship and say, hey, I noticed over here that you guys are doing A, B, and C. And when you do that, it causes you to turn down the machine, or it causes you to have to create extra spreadsheets, or causes you to have to reach out to clients. And you know that we have something that can address that. Does that make sense for us to talk about how we can prevent this from continuing to happen? Hey, that sounds like a great idea. So this is what I don't understand. Stop the product, people. All right, everybody, listen. Find the problems. Nobody in the entire sales world is better positioned to find problems than account managers because they're already in the house. Beck, I'm sorry.
No, don't be. So the question is how to upsell and cross sell, correct?
Basically, yes.
Yeah. Well, to Keenan's point, and I see this a lot with enterprise orgs.
But she said, though, not just how do you do it. She says, because it feels like all the advice we're giving her is only for AEs. She suggests a different approach. She said, all you guys talk about is about how to help AEs. How does someone who's already in the account and the customer already knows about our product, how do we do it? As if there's another approach.
Yeah. Well, even if they already know about your product, doesn't mean they know everything about it. And even if they do know everything about it, doesn't mean they know everything about the problems that they have that exist to date. You might find one that they didn't know about. So I kind of sum it up with this. For upsell, a lot of people are doing it as like a trial run. You have 20 seats to see if it solves the problem. And if it doesn't, they're going to cancel. like they're not going to expand it. So to upsell, meaning to sell more of something to someone, I think it's hinged off of that you solved that original problem and now they want to put the gas on you solving that problem. But to know that, you have to know the problem to begin with, which I'm going to be nice and say 90% of AMs usually don't know. I have another clip, but I don't want to get buzzed. I'm just going to take it like a woman. That did not feel good. For the cross sell, for them to buy another product, you have to find another problem. It doesn't matter to them that you're the vendor of all of those. Like, you have to find another problem. So that's either for cross sell, it's another problem for a separate decision maker. But for upsell, meaning a different feature to the same person, but you want to sell a different feature, you would have to find a problem that they can't solve with the existing product, because otherwise I would just do that. So the great example is Slack. I had Slack for free for the longest time until I wanted to start collaborating with Keenan and his teams on Slack. So all of a sudden I had a problem because I couldn't do that. We couldn't plan for the tour. We couldn't get assets out fast enough. We couldn't stay in lockstep unless I upgraded with Slack and bought an additional feature that allowed me to have outside vendors in my Slack instance. So you have to have a problem that didn't exist beforehand or that they didn't know about beforehand. You have to find that for them to buy an additional product. Because to Keenan's point, and Keenan, to your statement, just because you said it 1,000 times or 1,000,000,000 times, unless everyone heard it in the world, understood it, and in full comprehension, you're going to spend the rest of your life doing it. You know. But to his point, you have to find a problem. Otherwise, you do not have a sale. Cross-sell, upsell, resell, renewal, any of that shit. Like, you have to,
So, Beck, I get frustrated because I feel like because I'm using her words. Yeah. I've watched your show.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this is only for AEs. Where did she get that impression? Like,
yeah.
This is what I don't understand. What am I doing wrong that she's walking away with the impression that it's about the product and telling us about the product and that the buyer didn't know about the AE other product, but now they do. I am just beyond myself.
It's like prospecting. You just have to find a problem they didn't know about via cold email. Closing and selling, you just have to find all of the problems that they have. And you know what I'm saying? On the back end, you just have to solve the problem as a CSM. Find the problem they need to solve and solve it for them using your product. And cross them, upsell, renewal. You have to find a problem that they didn't know about, even if they bought your other product. Doesn't matter to me if it's a CVS and it sells all this different crap. I'm still not going to buy orange juice or fruit unless I know that I have a problem that I didn't know that I had beforehand that solved by with fruit. Otherwise, that fruit's going to go by the wayside. Keep going.
And I think what kills me is, look, AM should. I'm even more upset that this AM didn't see it. I use doctors and therapists all the time as my metaphors. If I'm a therapist and my job is to get new clients every day, I have no clue how the marriage between Beck and Min is working. I have to ask. If I sell you a therapy package and then I'm listening to you guys every day for a month, I should see things. And from those things I see, I should be like, oh, hey, I have heard you guys talk multiple times about the difficulty of managing your finances. You shared with me that during that process, you're concerned about your retirement. Can we take a second, Toronto? I'd like to dig into that. Then you go and you ask all these questions. You find out that it's a planning issue. You say, I'd like to recommend a financial planner for you to address that. Upsold. I could not have anticipated that as an AE. As an AM, I am in the fucking account. Pick up your goddamn head, pay attention to their business, stop trying to run stupid QBIs to talk about what they used, understand what they're trying to get, understand the outcomes, and you will outsell anybody in the AM fucking position if you pay a fucking attention.
Push notifications when they're like, remember to use our product. How likely are you to rate us to send us to a friend?
Yeah, this one got me fired up. It is the biggest missed opportunity in sales organizations, and it's no one's paying attention to it, and no one seems to care, and it drives me insane.
Well, all right.
So much faster, faster, more effective, and lucrative to, number one, keep your current customers, solving the problem they originally had. And you don't have to do any of the prospecting, cold email, closing, any onboarding, any of that. It's right in front of you. Then people are going to get more pipeline. Let's not worry about it. Just think about how you're swinging the bat.
Am I scaring everybody? In the comments, I think I'm scaring everybody.
Scaring me.
I know. Sorry, Beck.
All right. Let's get on to the next segment of this podcast, which is...
The Challenge.
This is the segment where Keenan and Beck break down a challenging subject within the sales industry. And today's challenge, or the first challenge of today, is how to create a problem-centric sales enablement function. Keenan, why don't you kick us off with this one?
Oof. Okay. How do we create a sales enablement function?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's really complex concept for 10 minutes, but I'll say this. I can give you the framework. Okay. I think the framework first and foremost needs to be an understanding of the problems that you solve. I should have written this down. Problems that you solve. Okay. Secondly, then, so it has to be a clear understanding. So we call it a pick chart. I don't care what you do, but you got to build a pick chart of some central repository of the problems, the impacts, and the root causes of the problems you solve, and that everybody understands what those problems are and everybody agrees throughout the organization. The second thing you need to do is you actually need to train the salespeople in that. So you need to build a training or learning and development environment or a playbook, whatever choice of word you want, depending on the size of the organization, your resources. You got to build training and awareness around the problems, the root causes from that pick, train people in that, the KPIs, how those KPIs are measured, the processes that those organizations use, where those processes tend to break down, what happens if those processes tend to break down, the types of tools and machines that are used inside of those processes, how those machines tend to break down or break, why they're connected, how not meeting those KPIs affects the broader business. You got to do all of that. Then you have to do a product piece and show how your product addresses each of those directly and why it's different than what they're doing now, why it's different than the competition. Then you need to build playbooks around messaging around those pieces, the intertwining or overlapping concentric circles of your product with the business environment they're in. Then you need to build the CRM to support that. So we have a CRM now that tracks those problems, those impacts, those root causes, so that as you sell deals, the management can go in and see, are these present? What is the problem for this customer versus this customer? How big is that problem? How are we defining that problem? What happens if they don't move from that problem? That has to be built into Salesforce. It has to be managed inside Salesforce and held them accountable. Then they need to have a coaching piece and feedback piece that holds them accountable and trains them to get better at that over time so they can position themselves as a trusted advisor. There, okay, I'll stop there. Beck, you can do the rest. I mean, there's a lot here.
Rest from there on out. Well, the piece that I'll double down on that I see most organizations not doing, the lion's share organizations not doing is the last piece that you mentioned. So even if you train someone on something, even if you, you know, like put all those things in place and put all those things in HighSpot or Seismic and tell them all the collaterals there on what their buyer's metriced on and blah, blah, blah. If you don't, from a tactical perspective, ask them to fill in to the CRM what the problem was, what the root cause was, what the current impact, future impact, current event trigger, future event trigger, and solution are, then, you know, and you just whip them on their conversion rates, like essentially all of that wasn't for naught. They'll pick up tips and tricks and techniques. But there has to be some level of reinforcement. I would say chiefly and paramount before anything that they do have the problem and a realization that they don't know what they're doing and that they aren't doing what you've asked them to do. So a great example of this is I see a lot of people that will come up to Keenan either live or virtually and they'll be like, I gap sell. They'll be like wearing the shirt or the book. Yeah, reading the book. And right. And Keenan, out of if 100%, scale, if you had 100 people who told you the gap sell, how many would you say with confidence, average people based on your experience, how many would you say actually gap sell and then actually gap sell well out of those 100? Zero.
Right? Zero. Literally zero. Literally zero.
I have to think that they're not dumb, meaning they don't walk up in a Gap selling shirt saying I Gap sell because they want to trick Keenan. They believe that they do. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they believe that they do is that their management hasn't exposed to them from the tactical perspective of like, no, you don't. So I think what that comes down to, and an eye-opening moment recently with a client, I said, they're like, you can only make one change to the scorecard, basically. What are you going to make? And I said, okay, have them fill after every deal review, have them fill out the 7 pieces of self-diagnosis, what the buyer believes is the problem, root cause, current impact, current event trigger, future event trigger, and solution, and what you believe as the expert diagnosis. So 2 things I was marking for is, can they fill those fields in at all? How quantifiable are they? Are they big enough? And 2, are those 2 fields always the same? And what it highlighted for these sales reps is they're like, holy shit, I'm not even finding out what the problem is. Holy shit, I'm not even being any value because I'm taking the buyers at their word. The self-diagnosis every single time was the same, and the rep got lazy, but they didn't know what else to put. So it exposed to them, I think, from a leadership perspective or sales enablement, I hear from enablement and then I'm going to stop of like, let's enable them. I'm like, sometimes it is the encouragement and sometimes it's the stick, right? They don't know that they don't gap sell. They don't know that they don't find the problem. They don't know that they don't find the root cause. And that's your job from an enablement perspective to help them uncover and realize and then coach against it and hold them accountable to. So I never hear about the stick function of like stick. If you didn't find this, why didn't you find this? We just talked about that. Is this an acumen question of like, you don't understand how to do it? Or is it you do understand how to do it, but you aren't doing it? Like, which problem? Both are fireable offenses. The first one is a little bit more charming, but I'm like, from the enablement side, if we're talking about enablement function, one that I never hear talked about is the accountability to understand, like from an educational view, do they understand? And this is within instructional design for building program. Do they, from a concept view, understand it? Do I understand what a root cause is from a technical perspective? Do I understand the difference between a business problem and a technical problem? Do I understand the difference between a business problem and an impact? Like if you were to quiz me on it, you can do that with quizzes. But then after that, from the actual execution element, like, do I understand what the different fundamentals of a horse are and hypothetically how to ride one? But then you have to put them on the horse, record them riding the horse and see if they actually know how to do it.
Yep.
Both of those, if you don't do it, like they might pick up a little bit by accident, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you got to get them there. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, go ahead.
No. So, I mean, look really quickly to your point about the rep. Half the problem is the business doesn't understand either.
So
we'll go through trainings and, you know, usually it's when they take the online training and they don't allow us to help them. Like, I always do it online and they call us back for help. And I'm like, your interpretation of everything I shared is completely different, right? It's just, you're not getting it. And so the management level can't even teach them that, right? So everybody's spinning around in this concept, but whether it's a gap selling, whether it's medic, at this point in time, I don't care. Right. The point being is, if you're going to run enablement, though, you must center your entire enablement. Ooh, this is interesting. Your entire enablement should not be about enabling the sales team.
It's enabling the business.
It should be about enabling the buyer to solve the problem or problems they're coming to you to solve. So every enablement person listening to that right now, your job in sales enablement is not to enable the sales team. Your job is to enable the buyers to understand the problems that they're trying to solve, how those problems are manifesting negatively inside the organization, their organization, and what is causing those problems, and then how, and only then, how your product or service can address those and get them back on track or get them to health, just like a doctor.
I have a question for
you. Yes, raise your hand. Yeah, the front row. Beth.
Long time listener, first time caller. what happens when you go into a gig? What do you do? what, like, this is dead on. What do you do, or what would you suggest doing when you go into a gig and you understand that the sellers, you know, don't understand the problems that they solve for the buyer, and neither do the SDRs, and then you go into sales enablement and they don't, and then they punt you to product marketing doesn't. They understand the products a little more in depth. Sales engineers don't, CSMs don't, and from top to bottom. Top to bottom.
That was good. I saw what you did there.
They do not understand their problems. What do you do?
We recommend the pick exercise.
But through the pick exercise and you look at the back end, you're like, this ain't right. It's costly, rework, more time, more money, save time, save money. And you know.
No, we recommend the pick exercise and we do it with them. We do it with them. And with that, he's right. We got to move on because I have a call. I have a client.
Yep.
2 seconds.
Before we end this podcast, we have our last segment, which is...
Oh, listen, just one more thing.
All right, this is the last segment of our podcast where Beck and Keenan share what's on their mind and give us their closing thoughts. Keenan, share with us your
Beck goes first. Beck wants to go first, Beck.
Beck.
So, in a quip, my mom owns a horse, rides a horse all the time, and rides it on a golf course. And she got kicked off the golf course, and that no one uses. And so she rallied and she went to the park and rec department of Plano and last night gave a huge presentation and speech to their entire department on like how basically all the houses around one of the equestrian, you know, presence there, how it's good for the horses, good for the community, blah, blah, blah. So number one, I'm proud of my mom for rallying and doing what she needed to get it done. Number two, I'm so proud of my dad that he was filming everything, pushing her to do it, taking photographs, and proud of her. So if you're going to have a partner, that's what it like.
That's why I've been married 30 years or 35, 40 years, whatever. That's why I've been married that long.
Anyway, Mike, what's your thing?
Keenan, what's your just one more thing?
All right, look, my just one thing is this. Most of you are running around trying to figure out what's going to make you happy. If I just start this business, if I get this quota, if I close this deal, if I meet this girl, if I have kids, if I, none of that's going to make you happy. You got to figure out why you're not happy right now. Because there's a study done by Martin Seligman has basically said that people who are happy now are successful. The people who are trying to be successful to be happy never are happy. So with that, ask yourself, if you're not happy right now, why not? Because anything you do tomorrow is not going to solve it.
Great.
All right. Well, that's our podcast.
Everybody, this is Keenan. Thank you. You've been watching Sales Top to Bottom.
And this is Beck. See you next week.
Peace.
Thanks for watching the Sales Top to Bottom podcast with Keenan and Beck. Subscribe to our YouTube channel for more sales content. And if you'd like to see us live, find us on Keenan's LinkedIn Live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is Sales Top to Bottom, signing off.